Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to a very special bonus edition of the Think Inclusive podcast. I am your host, Tim Villegas. If you aren't familiar with who we are, our main goal is to build a bridge between parents, educators, and disability rights advocates to promote inclusive education. And we do this by publishing articles by disabled advocates, parents of children with disabilities, and educators who are all in for inclusion. We are a big group, and we're only getting bigger. And this podcast is an extension of what we try to do every day on the website. For many of us, whether you are an educator or parent, or both, the COVID-19 pandemic has been a strain on all of us. And in late March of 2020, when word got out that Betsy DeVos, the Secretary of Education, was going to possibly recommend waiving part of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act because of the hardship that the coronavirus was putting on the educational system, we all got nervous. And so today on the podcast, I interview Denise Marshall, the Executive Director of the Council of Parent Advocates and Attorneys, and Jennifer Lesh, the President of the Council for Exceptional Children. Now, since my interview with Denise, DeVos has put out her recommendations to Congress, so keep that in mind as you hear our conversation. And Jennifer was able to respond to some of the things that were in DeVos's report. So after a short break, my interview with Denise Marshall of COPA and Jennifer Lesh of CEC. I'd like to welcome Denise Marshall from the Council of Parent Advocates and Attorneys onto the Think Inclusive podcast. Thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Oh, you are most welcome. Thanks for inviting me to be on today.
So the reason why I asked you to be on the podcast is there are some things going on in the educational landscape. The biggest thing right now is the effect that COVID-19 is having on our nation's schools, and not only schools, but specifically students with disabilities. And before we get into the questions that I had, some of our audience may not know what COPA is or who you are. So could you spend just a little bit of time explaining what COPA is and your role in the organization?
Sure. COPA is the Council of Parent Attorneys and Advocates, and we are a national nonprofit organization, and we protect the civil and legal rights of students with disabilities. So we have a diverse membership. We have parents and family members, attorneys, advocates, related professionals, brothers and sisters, grandmothers, and other family members. We have one restriction on membership, and that is that educators cannot make more than 50% of their income from the school district directly. And the reason for that is that many of our members are in some level of dispute with the system and use our resources to talk with each other about strategy and about best practice and things like that. So that's just one caveat that we were specifically designed for people who were on the parent side of the table if there is a dispute over education.
Do you expect that Betsy DeVos will be presenting recommendations to Congress? Do you have any sort of information about that or thoughts about that?
We do expect that she will be submitting a report to Congress. We do not have any information as of yet relating to what kinds of waivers she may be entertaining. We do know what some of the groups have been pushing for, and we have been repeatedly saying, and they're holding steadfast to the position that the IDEA already contains flexibility and it contains the ability to waive some of the requirements or for timelines or to amend the IEP of individual children by mutual agreement of the parents and the district. And so we believe that kind of individual flexibility is much more appropriate than blanket waivers of everything or select provisions of the IDEA. I don't think anyone would argue with the fact that the COVID-19 outbreak has really placed that tremendous strain on everyone, on schools, on districts, on educators, families, students. Everyone has been impacted. And yet we have seen an incredible response from all across the country, from educators and from families that are working together and sharing resources and innovation and making things work for students. Now, are there some children or students for whom that isn't working or who, for whom distance learning isn't working or, you know, that the parents and the district perhaps haven't been talking? Sure. But the fact that so many are lets us know that it is possible. So I think that, you know, while I understand the natural reaction to say, oh, we need a waiver from, for example, the timelines around evaluation, because once we get back to school, we're never going to be able to catch up with all of the different, you know, evaluations that are pending. And that's another reason that we feel that it's very strong and important for teams to continue to work together and to do any pieces of either the IEP for that student that can be implemented, or if they are just at the initial evaluation stage, for each student, they might be at a different place in the process. So if you've already collected all the data, you've already done the observations, and all that's left is to write a report and hold the eligibility meeting, then why not get that done online as long as everyone's comfortable doing that so we don't get a backlog? And, you know, the other kinds of waivers that people, you know, that I think were specifically mentioned in those letters are around the requirements to hold, for example, an annual IEP, I think was mentioned. And again, I think if everyone's comfortable, and I know many are doing it all across the country, holding the IEP meetings virtually, why not get them done? Why not have the team check in and decide, how is the student doing? We're going to find some students who are not doing well with the distance learning at all. And we will find some students who are really thriving and responding to this newer way of learning, and who may be being educated using online or computer services for the first time ever. So there's also a learning curve. So I think it's a natural process to go through to first say, no, oh gosh, we need a waiver of everything. And then try to narrow that down into, well, wait, what does that actually mean? And why do we think we need that? And our position is we don't.
I think the last thing I wanted to talk to you about was about funding. Is that something that you're advocating for, that for that additional funding be given to the states to implement special education services during this this time of the coronavirus pandemic? And if so, what do you think the money should be spent on?
So yes, we have been advocating for additional resources or perhaps relaxation in funding rules to allow services to continue and to meet students' needs. I think that, you know, from our perspective, that each district's going to have to figure out where the greatest needs lie. For some of them, it's in access to, you know, computers and technology and or the internet itself. And that may be on the part of families or perhaps on their teachers. You know, not everybody has the ability to just switch from in-person to online from the word go. Many districts did, and many families did, but there were definitely some that were slower. And I know of many districts that had resources already, such as extra computers or laptops or things that they could loan the families. Other districts don't have that, so they should certainly, you know, need to or have the resources that they need to make sure that there's equitable access. And they may also need things like, you know, a consultant, someone to help them make sure that the programs that they're choosing and the way that they're structuring the provision of education services online is equitable and is accessible to students with disabilities. They may need additional training for their teachers or for the families, and they may or they may need you know, software or those kinds of things. And in fact, they may also need to plan for, once the restrictions ease up across the country, you know, for the provision of one-to-one, perhaps, you know, individual services and supports for some students, for students with the more complex needs, for example, who may not be able to wait 6 months before having OT and PT or speech services. Those things may be able to resume on a one-to-one basis, even though the school buildings themselves may not be open. So I think we have to look creatively, and as we said earlier, you know, I think this is an opportunity to really look at the intent of the IDEA and get us back to, how do we work together? What resources do we already have, and what do we need? And let's make sure that everybody, you know, has what they need to make this work.
Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about while I've got you on the phone? Any other part of this COVID-19 situation that is on your mind, or that is important for COPA to talk about?
Sure. Well, COPA's priority through all of this is our children and families, and making sure that we can make sure, you know, provide continuity in learning and equitable access, and maintain rights. So, you know, in anything that's proposed at the federal or state level, we're encouraging our members and our colleagues to ask that question. Is there anything about this that's going to weaken student rights or undo, you know, any of the gains that they may have realized over the year. And if so, then you need to oppose it and think about, you know, how it can be implemented without weakening their rights or undoing their educational progress. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate you reaching out and covering this.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, Denise.
You too.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'd like to welcome to the podcast Jennifer Lesh, the president of the Council for Exceptional Children.
Thank you, Tim. I'm honored and humbled to be here as the president of the 2020 President for Council for Exceptional Children. This is actually the 98th year that the organization has been in existence. So in 2022, we are actually going to have our 100th anniversary celebration in Orlando, Florida at our convention there. But Council for Exceptional Children is actually a professional association of educators dedicated to advancing the success of infants, toddlers, children, and youth with exceptionalities. We have three tenets that we work around, and that's advocacy and standards and professional development. Currently, we have over 42,000 members. And within those 42,000 members, we also have 17 divisions where people can kind of find their interest home. Anything from Division of Early Childhood to transition to administrators and somewhere in between there. There's a place for everybody that's interested in special education. In addition to that, we have units in all 50 states and all the provinces of Canada. And some of those units are more active than others, but all are members. And so when you become a member of CEC, you become a member of a unit as well, and you can have the option of joining in the division. Right now, we've sent over 5,000 emails to our members of Congress advocating for emergency funding. So, and that's actually free to anybody. So you can sign up for that action alert and get our alerts and actually be in the queue to send emails to Congress as well with our advocacy pieces. Did you have a question in there about that?
Yeah, in fact, because you were talking about things that were free, I know that for at least the time being, CEC is offering a free is it a 60-day membership? I don't remember.
It's a 60-day membership. Yeah, I was going to mention that. So yeah, it's actually, yeah, we have a free membership through May 31st. And let me just give you the code. It's all capital letters. It's CECED60. So all you would have to do is go to the web page and go under membership. And when they ask you to pay, you would put that code in there. And you can get it free till May 31st. And we're actually, I hope I'm bragging in a true fashion here, that we were one of the first organizations when the schools started closing across the country, that we were one of the first organizations that was able to turn on a dime and actually host a free webinar for teaching special education online during COVID-19. And I think we probably had over 7,000 folks. And I know one of our divisions, CASE, the Council for Administrators in Special Education, they are hosting a series of webinars that have been highly attended. So, and we are continuing. We have little takes of things that people can just click on right on our website that are free. And we also have several resources that are free on the website. And as you mentioned, the membership is free. So we have got a lot of things going on here. We have a brand new executive director who is forward thinking and looking at things differently. So we're very excited about all of the things that are happening.
I do want to get to some of the questions that I sent you. And so since the news is a little bit different from when I first contacted you, let's just talk about some of the, you know, since Betsy DeVos has already given her recommendations to Congress this week, and I was able to preview the report. Now, you know, I'm not an expert in policy,
yeah,
so I think you're going to have to, you know, help me understand, help our listeners understand, you know, because the reporting on the decision and the recommendations by DeVos is that there are no waivers. But it seems like when I read the report that there are some recommendations about flexibility in timelines. So I know that I know this is a long setup to the question. I believe that you're the one who wrote the letter from your organization recommending flexibility in timelines. So maybe you could walk us through what were you advocating for and then your reaction to the DeVos's report?
Well, we are strongly against any waivers. I think that term in itself is really a negative term. We never want to waive anything to that piece. I think that this is an unprecedented time, and so there needs to be some flexibility, with timelines, not stating that services be negated in any sense of the form, and that all parties should do the very best that they possibly can, and following those principles within IDEA, and so. I was pleased at first that her language in the first part of that was that she was not touching anything within IDEA. In fact, we celebrated that piece of it. However, we are, with our senior policy advisors, we are watching very closely what's happening with on the Hill, and having some conversations with some of our colleagues on the Hill as to how that goes forward. And I do want to say that we are appreciative of the secretary, that she held all of the IDEA requirements, including FAPE, in place. And so we know that this is a starting point of the conversation, and that the topic's going to move forward. And we will definitely be there with our senior policy team and also our policy steering committee, as well as the board, to make recommendations to our membership, and having an action alert to come out based on that. So we are definitely committed to working with Congress on those next steps. And that if something is considered to be a waiver, that it's considered to be designed to be time limited and targeted and very narrow in scope. We're not advocates for a waiver. So,
some of the concerns from disability rights groups and advocates, about flexibility of timelines, was that IDEA already has that flexibility built in. So why do we need to make anything extra, any sort of language or change to the law, going forward, even if it's temporary? Why is that even necessary?
Well, I mean, IEPs are, we come out of date and evaluations. And so we need to have some flexibility with the services from Part C to Part B. Those things we need to make sure that they're continued for our students, and states and LEAs need to have a little bit of guidance and flexibility there. So, I don't think that anybody is saying that to waive any piece of IDEA at all.
Sure.
I hope that answers your question. You know, it's one of those things that's like weaving a very thin thread through a needle. And so, I have been on both sides of it, and I see, that some school districts are really, they're having some difficult times. I was talking to a colleague of mine last night, and she was working with a child doing one-on-one therapy, teletherapy, and the child kept turning off the computer, and the mom was running around trying to get the child back, and every time the mom turned the computer on, the child would turn it off, and the therapist was seeing the child running, or the mom running around the house trying to get the child. It's a difficult time. Some of our professors at our university are asking us in the College of Education, give us some tips, because I'm trying to work at home and trying to keep my child engaged or do what he has to do. So I don't think any of us have ever experienced anything like this in life. We'll be better the next time this happens. But I think we need to work together is really, you know, and not come down on a side. Let's work together to make this work and figure out to problem solve together how we can make this a better solutions for if this happens again.
I appreciate your comments about that. One thing I wanted to ask you in relation to something else that advocates and disability rights groups are concerned about is I forwarded you an article from Huffington Post about the new, a district in New Jersey. And just to clarify, you know, as we're setting up this, this particular district was asking for parents to sign and waive away their right to due process or to file any lawsuit against the school district before they receive services. So if you could just give me your thoughts on that, I would, you know, we would appreciate that.
You know what? Yeah. To be perfectly honest with you, I had not heard that. But then when I reached out to a couple of my colleagues, because when I opened up your article, I was like shocked. I was literally shocked. I'm like, how could a district do that? And then I asked some of my colleagues, like, yeah, I kind of heard about it, but I didn't really know that. And, you know, and to me, when I hear that, it sounds like to me a quid pro quo, you know, really like, and it's not in the spirit of IDEA at all. And so I think, everybody that's come down with guidance, including the secretary's guidance, makes it very clear that all students should have access to an education, even during the COVID-19 crisis. And we shouldn't be putting, if this, then that type of responses in there. And I have to say, I've been a long proponent of building partnerships with parents and families. They've helped make my life easier when working with their child, because no one knows their child better than the parents and the families. And so together, we can make a difference for their child. So really, to me, what this article is stating that has occurred, that's a disservice to many of us special educators across the country who are doing our darndest to continue to provide services to our students. And, if this is true, this is alarming. My question is, why would you not try to build a relationship with your parents instead of trying to build a wall between the two of you? And so really, I have to say, this is not what we stand for at CEC. And that's why I'm part of CEC. Definitely. I was shocked, actually, when I opened it. I'm like, what? So, yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate your thoughts on that. And it's something you had mentioned previously in our conversation was about funding. I'm not sure if any of us were really expecting, Betsy DeVos to explicitly recommend additional funding, for IDEA or for services that, are related to, working with students with disabilities, but as moving forward and especially now that Congress has her recommendations, is that something that CEC is going to be advocating for?
Absolutely. Well, as I mentioned before, we've already had 5,000 letters in that vein, but we are continuing, and that action alert is on there. And we will be pushing again for emergency funding for IDEA. So I would invite all of your listeners to find our policy advocacy page on cec.sped.org and send a action alert to your representatives and senators.
As we look forward to the 2020-2021 school year, what are your biggest concerns in regards to supporting students with disabilities?
So, first and foremost, I think the well-being of our students and their families, that's most important. And of course, the well-being of our special educators. I think this has taken a toll on folks, And I don't know that we're actually going to know that toll until we kind of get back to the new normal. So that's my personal first concern is how is everybody? Are we okay? And then my second is to make sure that our students, that the students get what they need to continue to gain academically and behaviorally and, of course, social emotionally. And that we as special educators have those resources to do so. And I'm hoping that we as professionals, along with our parents and families, continue to coalesce around a collaborative effort to do what's right for our kids, because we are all in this together. And only together we are much stronger in making things better for our kids.
I really appreciate taking the time to speak with me.
It's my pleasure. Really, it's my pleasure. Thank you for all the work that you do. Thank you, Tim. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
If you would like to hear the entire unedited recordings of my interviews with Denise Marshall or Jennifer Lesh, consider becoming a Patreon subscriber at patreon.com/thinkinclusivepodcast. Follow the Think Inclusive podcast on the web at thinkinclusive.us and tell us what you thought of the podcast via Twitter at @inclusive_pod or find us on Facebook or Instagram. You can also subscribe to the Think Inclusive podcast via Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, or on the Anchor app. We love to know that you are listening. Also, a reminder that you can support the Think Inclusive podcast via Patreon or Anchor FM with a monthly contribution so that we can continue to bring you in-depth interviews with thought leaders in inclusive education and community advocacy. On that note, thank you to Patreons Donna L., Gabby M., Tori D., Kathleen T., and Veronica E. for their continued support of the podcast, as well as our new $1 a month Patreons. Every little bit helps. Also, a special shout out to my producer and love of my life, Brianna. There is no one I'd rather be quarantined with. Thanks to my boys, you know who you are, for your feedback and suggestions. It is always greatly appreciated. See you next time on the Think Inclusive podcast.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.